Holy heck, and welcome to the So Is It Any Good's Movie Nerds Podcast. Tonight we're talking about Baby Driver, Matthew Vaughn directing Man of Steel 2, we're going to cast The Matrix Reboot, and we're going to maybe talk about some crazy movie theories. We're going to go through some quick reviews for Beauty and the Beast, Kong, and Cure for Wellness, and we're going to talk about the movie challenge for weeks 10 and 11. I'm your host, Ryan.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Ben.
And this is the Movie Nerds Podcast. So let's go straight into the first bit of news that came out this week, and that comes from Matthew Vaughn directing the new Man of Steel. Now, personally, I think Matthew Vaughn is way above the league of Man of Steel 2, but according to the internet and Hollywood, he's not. What do you guys think?
I think it's a good choice for the DC universe, but I agree. I think he's way better than a sequel to... I'm not the biggest Superman fan, so I find all of his movie outings supremely boring.
I think that's because Superman is a character that has too many powers, for one, and the only thing that takes him down seems to be kryptonite. And it appears that Hollywood can only come up with one villain for the Superman alumni, and that's Lex Luthor. Superman has so many villains and so many cool ideas that are actually in his universe that we just haven't seen because Hollywood hasn't got the balls to do it. Like, Brainiac would be a really cool idea, which I'd like to see, but at this point they haven't done it. What do you think, Ben?
Well, no, I was just going to say Brainiac. Pretty sure Brainiac was in the Tim Burton version with Nicolas Cage, which he was obviously trying to make.
The mythic Tim Burton version.
Yeah, and there's a great documentary about that as well. It's a little boring in parts, but it just, you know, everyone's seen that image of Nicolas Cage in that ridiculous suit. But yeah, you're right. I feel like we talk about this a lot, like this Superman on the big screen, like, everyone's really skeptical, not only with DC at the moment, but also just, is it possible to, you know, to do Superman justice in this like realistic, gritty kind of movie world we live in? I don't know, like, whether they should just give up. If this doesn't work, I think we should just give up.
Yeah.
I don't think Superman is a gritty character. That's why I think the main issue is with these Superman movies, is he's like a lighthearted, you know, basically go-lucky kind of guy, and they put him in this dark Batman universe. It doesn't work. Even when Superman enters the Batman universe, it's almost like sunshine and rainbows, and Batman gets shitty about it. It's Batman that's almost like the fish out of water when Superman's in his planet, in his city. So I think that's half the issue. They need to get rid of the grittiness.
Yeah.
There's no reason for it.
Well, that's kind of the take that Matthew Vaughn pitched when he pitched to take over the reins. I think it was when Chris Nolan and David Goyer pitched Man of Steel, what became Man of Steel. So he pitched a much lighter take on the character, and WB ended up going with Chris Nolan, obviously. Yeah, so it's like, if it does in fact pan out, like, it'd be an interesting sort of left turn for Superman and the DC universe, but mm-hmm. I don't know, it kind of sounds like just rumor and gossip at this point in time.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty funny. I thought that you had Bryan Singer, who was playing, you know, who was directing the X-Men series, and he went off to do his Superman movie. And now you have Matthew Vaughn, who took over Bryan Singer to do an X-Men movie, and now he's going over to do a Superman movie. I think that's pretty cool, like, how the world kind of turns around.
Yeah.
Personally, I think DC is lucky as hell to get Matthew Vaughn, but Matthew Vaughn can do way better. It's like, you know, like a good-looking dude going out with an ugly broad, or the opposite way around. It's just, something is just not matching. Someone's got to have the good personality there, or it's just not going to work.
Kudos for saying broad.
Yeah, we've now lost all our female listeners.
Oh, man. I think at this point we've lost everyone.
Yeah,
I think we are the only people listening to this. So let's forget about people we lose from now on. It doesn't matter. Let's talk about the Baby Driver trailer and the new Edgar Wright film, Baby Driver. It's all about Baby. He's a driver trying to protect his girlfriend from the treacherous men of Skeletor. I don't know. He's trying to protect people from his arch nemesis. I don't know what he's doing. Tell me about the movie, someone, because I clearly have no idea.
Did you even watch the trailer?
I don't know where I was going with that. Can you guys explain that one?
It follows the character of Baby, who's a driver for hire. He works for Kevin Spacey's character. who seems to be some sort of suited mob boss who just gets people together to pull off heists. And he has a condition called tinnitus, which means that he's got a ringing in his ears all the time. So he drowns that out with iPod. Basically, Baby the character is soundtracking the movie. There's something upwards of like 35 songs in the movie. And,
wow.
And the cool thing is that you don't really get a sense of in the official trailer, but the international trailer does better, is that a lot of the action sequences and even sort of the dialogue and stuff is synced to the to whatever music is playing. So,
oh, right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds really awesome. They kind of pitch it as a like Gone in 60 Seconds meets La La Land. So
right.
It's like they're obviously not singing the songs, but like everything is choreographed to music. I'm pumped
well,
about
if
it.
Nick Cage makes a, if Nick Cage makes a cameo, I'm totally involved in that movie. but I didn't like the standard trailer. The international trailer had me, you know, gagging for more on the way, but the normal trailer just wasn't that all that. And I kind of just like, you have to think, why didn't they come out with the international trailer first?
It's like the,
it's crazy how much different there is in those two trailers.
Yeah, it's kind of trying to hedge its bets, I think, in the official trailer. They're trying to get those people that probably won't want to watch it if all they went out with was the international.
You know what it is? It's the Fault in Our Stars fans is who they're trying to get with that trailer.
Yeah.
It's like they introduced the love story more at the start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true.
You can it's got marketing like written all over it. I'm sure that's just a case of Edgar Wright getting the trailer he wanted and them getting the trailer they wanted kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's the editing in this film, I think, is going to be just insane. Like he's always got amazing transitions in all his movies, and the vision's always so well timed to the music. So he's just pushing it to the next level by the looks of this. And it just won the audience award at South by Southwest. So it won the popular award. So
that's what you want.
It's going to be pretty awesome when it finally arrives. In August.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue with it, that they're waiting till fucking August to release it.
All right, so let's move on from that. Another big news bit from this week is that Warner Brothers is going to reboot, remake, or even continue on the story of The Matrix. They're going to go the Rogue One route and try to make a story of a prior events to the original films. So that will probably mean that there's no Neo, there's no Morpheus. There might be Morpheus, but he's definitely not going to be Lawrence Fishburne unless he has some CGI Patrick Stewart kind of shit happen to his face. So what I wanted to do, because we know what's going to be about, so who cares about that? I wanted to find out who you guys thought would be cool to bring into the Matrix universe. There's literally crickets in the background that I can hear. Literally crickets.
Yeah, well, it is.
I'm not
we
even
are recording
kidding.
This at nighttime when crickets usually come out. So
yeah. So
and we're talking. I'm not talking about like who you think they're going to cast. I want a fan casting of who you want to see in this movie. Like who you want to see dodging bullets, who you want to see bullet time, who you want to see flying around, who you want to see jumping from building to building, who you want to see entering the Matrix and learning motherfucking Kung Fu. Who do you want to see?
Keanu Reeves.
I'm going to throw in Keanu Reeves. You're a dickhead. I'm going to throw in some names.
All right.
How about like they bring in actual people that already know Kung Fu and then the fight moves and shit like that could be awesome. Not like I'm saying like, maybe people like Jackie Chan, but more like Donnie Yen. Donnie Yen. How cool would Donnie Yen be in this movie?
Yeah.
Shit, yeah, he would.
Like, even if he was like the Morpheus character and he was mastering one of the newbies that came into the film, but Donnie Yen could be fucking cool in this movie,
yeah,
I think.
He's awesome.
Because pretty much he can do no wrong.
Yeah.
And if he was playing like a mentor character like Morpheus, it gives him kind of less speaking that he has to do because I don't think his acting part of his life is maybe his greatest, you know, key to his, I don't know, performance, whatever. But
I thought it was really.
But
good
I think he could
one.
Be. But he didn't really say much. All he said was, "I'm one with the Force, and the Force is with me." You know, no, that's not
that
hard
whole,
to say.
He was one of the funniest characters. They had that
true,
whole banter
true.
Thing going.
Yeah,
that's when that movie actually kicked off.
I'm going to take that further. I'm a huge fan of the Raid movies, and Iko Uwais, who's the main dude in the Raid, like he's fucking awesome. But yep. So he shows up in The Force Awakens briefly when...
Kanja Club.
Yeah, that's right. I was trying to remember the name. When the movie turns into Guardians of Galaxy for about 10 to 15 minutes.
It does, doesn't it? That's a really good point. Yeah, when Han has to settle a deal with the two teams that come onto his on the cargo ship.
Yeah, and there's the dude with there's the dude with the Scottish accent. Scottish character in Star Wars.
You said you'd tell us to take $50,000. I can't 50,000 credits. I can't do a fucking Scottish accent. That was awful.
Yeah, that was just your regular voice.
That was just my regular voice.
I think you're onto something here, man. I think you're definitely onto something here.
Yeah.
The Matrix films are influenced by anime and kung fu films, so
that's right. And the first films all had, American actors trying to do kung fu moves, which is cool and all. And Keanu really worked and looked awesome because Keanu, whenever he tries to do something, he does it, 120%. But I think, the other people in the film kind of let it down. Like Morpheus, he's way too big to be doing these kung fu fights. Like in that the scene where they're both training together.
Yeah.
Like Lawrence Fishburne was just basically jumping over the place and putting his knee into things. He wasn't really actually fighting. There was no real fighting with him. And
that's partly the character too. They kind of give him that whole, like, I'm better than you thing. So like, I'm way faster than you. So I'm just going to like stand here with my hand behind my back and
that's right. Your punches. That's right. But imagine fucking Donnie Yen taking on Keanu Reeves. Yeah. But what I would like to see, because you can't have a movie these days without The Rock in it. I'd love to see The Rock enter the ring of The Matrix, but be killed off really fucking early, like Drew Barrymore style, and get him on the poster, put him front and center, and have above him, like, before the one, there was The Rock, or something along those lines.
And then he just dies in the first five minutes.
And he dies in the first 5 minutes. How cool would that be? Like, they've set him up in the whole trailer, do even like a teaser trailer, and it's just have the sequence where he dies before he dies kind of thing.
That'd be awesome.
And then like, everyone thinking, oh, we're going in for The Rock. It's going to be fucking unreal.
Yeah.
And then, boom, they actually get a whole lot of Thai characters and Vietnamese characters and Asian actors and all these things, and it's going to be amazing. That's what I would do.
I reckon, man, my pick is bring back Wesley Snipes, man. He knows kung fu.
He does know kung fu. The Daywalker, Wesley Snipes, tax evasion.
He would probably just act with his teeth like he always does, but he would he'd definitely be up for it.
He does act with his teeth. Oh, shit, that's funny. Yeah,
go back
Blade, and look, he's always smiling like an idiot.
Yeah, Blade. Go back and look at all the Blade movies, and he's just acting with his teeth.
Wow.
Even to an extent, he always has sunglasses on. He's kind of like just... It's like he bites down at the back.
So he chews the scenery is what you're saying.
No, he can't because he doesn't open his mouth.
Well, you learn something every week on this podcast, don't you?
And for directing wise, I mean, you could probably guess who I'm going to say.
Is it
Arnie?
I'll
give you two guesses. No, it's Gareth fucking Evans. Bring in Gareth Evans. He knows what he's doing with these movies. He's the director of Raid and Raid 2.
Right.
He's the perfect choice to direct these movies. I'm not just saying I love the shit out of Raid and 1 2, but I do. But if we're talking Matrix movies, the two make sense. Like, it just makes sense. The Raid has so much of the Matrix elements in it. Bringing him over to do that movie would just be, I think, flawless.
Yeah.
I
feel like it all depends on how much of the movie they want to set in the Matrix and how much they want to set in the real world. And if there's more real world stuff, they might be less inclined to go with like a kung fu.
The real world stuff is better with kung so fu dire in those movies.
I think they'd be idiots. They'd be idiots to set it outside of the real world. Yeah. That's where two and three failed.
Yeah.
They kept going back to
the sweaty orgy.
Yeah, and it was crap. That was the same sequences I hated, like the mech warriors at the end of three, and like the party sequences where they were fucking awkward as hell. You could just tell those people were dancing to no music. That just later on added it into it. It was awful.
Just all of the third movie, basically.
Let's not turn this into Matrix sequels bashing session. We'll be here for hours.
All right. Well, let's finish that off with...
Moving on.
The Matrix reboot. The big cast we want to see is basically the guys from The Raid. The Rock getting killed off in the first 5 minutes. And Gareth Evans, the director of Raid 1 and 2, taking the reins and directing the film. That's my personal belief. You guys didn't really have too much input. You just agreed with me. That's cool. Let's move on.
Where's the Snipes, man?
We're the yes man.
We're just the other members of Destiny's Child to your Beyonce, man.
So, let's move into... They never really make sense. Who cares anyway? It's Ryan's crazy movie theory of the week. This week, my theory is... What if I'm going to say? You're going to get excited about it. What if so. Commando
the last one blew my mind.
What so. If Commando, the Arnold Schwarzenegger starring action epic adventure, was the prequel, or maybe the sequel? Either way, it works either way. To motherfucking Predator. Now, the connection I have here is that they're both set in the fictional place of Valverde, which is a Colombian jungle-esque type area where Cubans can sometimes be terrorists and predators can sometimes roam. That's pretty much my connection. And obviously, both star Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I'm thinking, if we forget about the fact that John Matrix is his character name in the first film, and we just give him Matrix, then maybe that could be his, you know, his military name in Predator. Oh. And maybe they're the same person.
Wow.
Because they're both,
pretty good,
they're both,
actually.
They're both military people. They're both, you know, ex-SEAL guys. They've, you know, got their own team. If you kind of think that maybe his original team was killed off in Predator or Commando, either way you went, and then he was given a new team, and this new team was, you know, the new team in Commando or Predator, then this could be the sequel. And the funny thing about this is that Commando 2 was actually going to be made, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, yeah, man, I want to be on Commando 2, and then he was slid in the script for Predator, and he was like, well, why the fuck would I do Commando 2 when this magnificent script is here? And then he's done Predator.
He's like, I want to go back to exactly the same place.
Yeah, so this place has kind of appeared in a whole bunch of places, which is pretty cool. So Valverde is in Predator, it's in Commando, it's in Die Hard 2, and then it's in a bunch of other movies that don't really matter. But in general, that could happen, I think. I think we're onto something.
Maybe there's a bigger theory here. Is Arnie just the same in every movie? or is that just me like thinking that Arnie plays the same character in every movie?
That's sacrilegious.
Don't you dare say that about Arnold Schwarzenegger. You take that back, you son of a bitch.
But, yeah. There's no way that John Matrix is the same as Richard Kimball.
No. But
his name is John Kimball, you dickhead.
John Kimball?
His name is John Kimball.
Maybe he retired and became a kindergarten teacher. Who knows?
Let's forget about John Kimball. What about Jingle All the Way? He's a guy that works at a sales team. I mean, come on. Yeah. There's no way. They're not connected. You think my crazy theories are crazy? Ben, you're knocking it out of the ballpark with that bullshit.
No, but look, if he's a salesman, he could just be undercover in the same way that he's a salesman in True Lies. Isn't he a salesman in True Lies or a computer?
You're my number one customer. He's a computer technician computer tech salesman that's actually working for the CIA. True, I'll accept it maybe, but you know, a lot of it doesn't make any sense. I'm seeing a lot of holes in yours.
I feel like I could make it make sense if I had the time and if I was able to present you with an essay.
Mine already makes sense. Or the only thing you have to forget is the fact that his name is John Matrix and Dutch Schaefer. Yeah. If you just forget that for a little bit,
names mean nothing.
Yeah,
exactly. He's been given a new name to hide away from the villains of Predator, the people who are out to get him from the base that he goes to. I don't know, the base where they're trying to save the hostages, and then they end up slaughtering everyone. Anyway, let's move on. So there's been a fair amount of movies that came out this week and last week and maybe the week before, because we're a bit late on this podcast. Let's not talk about that. Let's just move along. And those movies might be Kong, Cure for Wellness, and this week, Beauty and the Beast. Ben, you've seen Cure for Wellness. What do you think about it? Yes or no? Give us a little bit of a rundown.
Look, it was a no, and I think the reason for that was that it just did not live up to its premise. And it was quite, like, the production design in this movie is impeccable. It's got the gothic horror thing going on with another character, Dane DeHaan's character, visiting this spa retreat in Switzerland. And it's pretty obvious this place, there's some weird shit going on. It's very Shutter Island as he kind of like gets closer and closer to the truth about what's really going on in this place. And as he kind of loses his mind, things get fucking weird. It goes to a dark place at the end. But I think by that stage, you've kind of just kind of given up on the film, because it just doesn't make very much sense at all. And the last 20 minutes just feel like they're from a completely different movie, which is something that most people have picked up on with the movie. But Gore Verbinski, say what you want about him as a director, but he's got a really good eye. Like, he's a visionary, or at least he's the artist that he surrounds himself with are visionaries. But yeah, it's not, it doesn't make up for the fact that it just loses you, like about just over the hour mark, I think it starts to lose you, and you kind of, yeah, the visuals aren't enough to make up for the lack of story. So that's a no.
Damn. I thought that movie looked all right. It looked like one of those movies like Armageddon and Deep Impact, but, you know, like Shutter Island and this film, but they were almost like 5 years apart. Like they kind of just went, normally you can get away with it because they look like a cheap film. They've looked at each other's script and been like, oh, maybe I can make a similar film to that. But yeah, this one did it 5 years later.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised Martin Scorsese didn't knock on any doors and be like, hey, why are you taking my stuff? I don't know why he sounds like that, but he sounds like he might because he's got really big eyebrows and that's the thing. Anyway.
I don't think... Between this and Lone Ranger, I don't think he's going to be making much profit off this one either.
No,
which is a shame. He's almost a Zack Snyder.
It does brutal. It does look a little sucker punchy.
But that's like his career almost. He's only had one real good movie, and that was, you know, the first Pirates movie. And then everything else he's done has kind of been a bit mediocre.
I like Rango.
He did Rango as well.
Oh yeah, Rango was good. Sorry, I forgot about Rango. That's almost like an animated movie. I feel like you have, you know, like a 50-50 chance of animated films. All right, well let's move on to Kong. Have you guys seen Kong?
No,
I have not.
Okay, so I didn't. I went to the movies with this with Nick, one of the other guys from the site, and he hated it, like loathed it entirely, basically threw his popcorn straight at the film, you know, pulled down his pants and showed his butt to the screen. But I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I gave it a yes for my review. He gave it a no, obviously. There's a lot of action in the film, which is very fun. There's a lot going on. There's no hiding from Kong, which is really cool. Like he's in it 10 minutes into the movie, and then he basically stays in it throughout the whole entire film, unlike Godzilla, which is, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes of dinosaur goodness or whatever you want to call him, Godzilla goodness. And there's a lot of broken cliches in this movie, and I'm all for broken cliches. If movies are doing the same thing other movies are already doing, it gets very boring. This film, you know, flips a lot of things on its head, which I find really fun. And how can you not like King Kong throwing goddamn palm trees at helicopters and smashing right through them and killing everyone inside? And then he picks up other helicopters and throws them into other helicopters, and then he picks up people and throws them into things. How could you not want to be a part of this? It sounds fucking amazing. Lock me in. I want to see five of these. The only thing that weighs it down is that it's very much a Predator type film, which funnily enough I was just talking about, but it does a thing where Predator kind of like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, Billy, you know, maybe Mac and maybe and Dylan. But the other characters, the other three characters, Hawkins, Poncho and Blaine, you're kind of like, oh, I don't really know your backstory and I don't really care. And I don't need to. You've got a minigun and that's enough for me. This one has 12 characters and gives every one of them a backstory. And you've got big actors like Brie Larson, John Goodman, Tom Hiddleston, and Sam Jackson in a movie where they all get, you know, 5 minutes of screen time that tries to explain a backstory to them, and then they're just all over the place. It's the character development and that kind of stuff that bogs it down. There's too much of it, and I can't say there's not enough action because there's shit tons of it, and it's awesome when it's happening. But I think a little less characters in it would have gone a whole long way. A little bit more of John C. Reilly, a little less Sam Jackson just doing Sam Jackson from the last 25 movies that he's been in would be amazing. And that's what I hope for Kong 2, Kong versus Godzilla. I don't know. Anyway, and the other movie I saw recently was Tale as Old as Time, The Beauty and the Beast. Wait, do you guys want to say anything about Kong?
No, I haven't seen it.
Sorry, look, I just went straight into Beauty and the Beast, sorry.
No, I will be checking it out at home. I don't think I'll venture out to the cinema based on your review.
Oh, man, look, I think that's the best place to see it, the cinema. I think it's definitely worth seeing in the cinema. If there was any place I would suggest seeing it would be the cinema. I don't think it's worthwhile seeing it at home. I'd pay the money to see it in the cinema.
So you say, I'll wait for for when it gets to $10
movie a week. Yep. Which is unfair for the American listeners who are probably non-existent when they get movies for $8 every week.
Yeah.
I want that shit. Anyway, so the other movie I saw was Beauty and the Beast, Tale as Old as Time, the remake that was not necessary.
Stop saying
the remake that wasn't necessary of an animator film that everyone remembers and almost got a Best Picture Academy Award.
This is Disney's new cash cow, isn't it?
It is. They're making live action remakes of all their animated films, yeah. Which I think kind of makes sense. If you think about it, all those films are almost like 25 years old to even like 40 years old and 50 and 60 years old with Cinderella and stuff like that. It makes sense. You can't have anything against them. No, like I have troubles getting Ryder to watch, you know, Princess and the Frog. What chances do I have of getting him watch Cinderella? It's not going to happen. Yeah. But I might have a bigger chance of getting him to watch the live action remake of Cinderella because it's modern. It feels more current. There's special effects in it. It's kind of cool. Beauty and the Beast. I thought I wouldn't like it. I didn't like any of the trailers because they went very dark. They went very gritty. And I think a lot of the things I liked about the film were bright and stuff like that. This movie is awesome. It's really freaking good. I gave it a massive yes. It's probably one of the best movies I've seen in a while. The music in it's unbelievable. Like they do everything to a T that they did in the animated movie, but better. Be Our Guest, the number with Ewan McGregor and Ian McKellen and Bell and, you know, Emma Watson and whatnot is like amazing. Coming from a dude saying that loves action movies and shit, it is amazing.
You're also partial to a musical, so.
I'm very partial to a musical. Don't judge me.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's really good. They've casted this movie amazingly. Luke Evans is like, he would take on that Disney Gaston that is flawless in so many different ways. He's got a great singing voice. Emma Watson's pretty good as Belle. She's probably my biggest letdown of the film, I think. Her singing voice is definitely not up to scratch compared to everyone else. She drops a couple. Anyway, does not point. She's really good. Josh Gad's amazing. Who else is in the film? Everyone's good in it. It's really good. I highly recommend. Beauty and the Beast, go see it as many times as you can. Take your wife, take your kids, take your girlfriend, take your boyfriend, take your partners, take everyone. Go see it. Beauty and the Beast, Disney. Amazing. Well done.
Tales all this time.
Tales all this time.
That's the subtitle, right?
Truth is all can be. So let's move on. Let's move right into the movie challenge. Weeks 10 and week 11. And they were High School Movies and Schindler's List. And the reason I wanted to put Schindler's List in is because I don't think enough people have seen this movie. It's about the Holocaust. It's brutal as all hell, and it's probably the most realistic version of the Holocaust that you'll ever see. And I just think that everyone needs to see this movie. It's almost like a rite of passage. It's a history film that everyone needs to see. It's unbelievable, and it's absolutely crazy that this happened in our world, not in our generation of, I was going to say unfortunately, but it happened in our kind of time, and it shouldn't have, and it needs to be seen. Anyway, so that's why it's in the movie challenge. I wanted to try and make sure everyone has seen Schindler's List, and I hope that you guys actually saw it, because it's definitely a movie worth watching. And the other one is High School Movies. And that's just because High School Movies are awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a good double.
Yeah.
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 If you needed to watch double. Weeks 10 and 11 together, you would have had a high and then a low.
So let's talk about week 10, High School Movies. I'm not going to lie to you. I kind of cheated with this. But to be fair, I kind of thought it was a high school movie when I went into it. But then it actually turned out that it's nothing to do with high school. So now I kind of feel bad about it, because when I talk about high school movies, they only need to have, you know, the setting of teenagers, and it's set sort of in high school. Like, I'm not expecting the entire film to be set in high school, like Breakfast Club. I just wanted it to be a teenage movie with high school being a setting in it, kind of American Pie kind of style movie.
Yep.
So I watched an awesome movie called Turbo Kid. I don't know if you guys have seen this movie. Have you guys seen Turbo Kid?
I've never heard of it.
Okay.
What the hell? Explain okay. yourself.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about Turbo Kid.
Just quickly.
It is fucking amazing. It is this movie that's set in the dystopian future of 1997, and the apocalypse happened in 1980. So the entire film looks like this 1980s styled amazing thing, and it's absolutely gruesome as hell. So you have to kind of picture the whole thing being set in dystopian future, like Mad Max style. You know, it's kind of a bit Star Warsy. There's all these different types of characters that he sees throughout his journey and stuff like that.
Sounds
I need to
amazing.
Be quick about it. So
I don't even know how you found this.
It's like the greatest film of all time. Just to quick things up, I give you a synopsis from the website. In the post-apocalyptic wasteland, an orphan teen claimed by Munro Chambers must battle a ruthless warlord played by Michael Ironside to save a girl of his dreams. So yeah, it's a New Zealand film. Everyone's trying to do American accents. Some of them do okay. Most don't. That's fine though, because the film is definitely a hard R. It's got styles of like Kill Bill, Mad Max, and so much 80s retro, it's not funny. The opening of the film is basically a complete ripoff of Rad. You've got the John Farnham track from Rad titled to this kid smashing around on jumps on a BMX. And then that style continues on throughout the whole film. Everyone rides BMXs in the film. There's no cars whatsoever. It's kind of like the dystopian future when there's no water, so everyone's trying to battle for water and stuff like that. There's a guy running around with a mask, a skull mask that has a like a chainsaw blade for a hand, but it shoots out those chainsaw circular thing, like a circular saw blade, cuts off people's heads. It's violent as hell. Like, there's literally people losing arms. There's a sequence where a guy gets chopped in half and then he gets thrown onto another guy's head, and the guy's walking around with a body on top of his head. It's amazing. You need to see this movie. It's like ridiculously cool. If you're in Australia, it is on Stan. It is worth the $10 for the first month of Stan just to get this movie. Wow. There's a sequel coming out of it soon. I'm so pumped. You guys need to see it. It's ridiculously amazing. When Turbo was it Kid. Made? 2015.
Oh, okay. So it's recent.
Relatively new.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Turbo Kid. I'm gonna try and get a screening of this thing up because I don't think enough people have seen it, and I'm gonna try and bring out the directors for it because it needs to be seen. It needs to happen.
You know the whole entirety of that review, we thought you were talking about a film made in the '80s.
Yeah.
I think we both presumed it was not meant to be bad. I think it's trying to be bad.
It's trying to be bad, but it does it so well.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, I figured it was like made the same time as Rad.
No, sorry.
And I think we've...
Should I open up with that?
No, I don't think so at all.
No, I think it sounds like it's paying homage to Rad and other films from the era.
It's paying it's so much homages to everything. Like it's so good. It's got one of the guys from Wentworth as the main cast. And Michael Ironside. That's about it.
I think that you are a connoisseur of BMX movies.
I fucking love BMX movies. It's because I fucking loved BMX as a kid. It was the only thing I was good at. That and roller skating. Sport, I sucked ass at. Soccer, anything like that. Football, no good. Because either I couldn't run or my mom was yelling at me not to play it. But BMX and roller skating, man, I was king of that shit. So, yeah, any kind of BMX movies, I'm in. You have me at hello. You had me at B. But Turbo Kid, highly recommend. It's on Stan. Go see it. I'm going to try and get a screening of it up here in Sydney. It's going to be hard to get people to it because it's a no-name movie, but you need to see it. It's amazing. Yeah, so unfortunately, I cheated unintentionally. I thought there would be a high school in this film because it had a kid that was like 14.
Yeah.
Anyway, apologies for cheating.
It's kind of a metaphor for high school.
I'm pretty sure what I saw was definitely qualifies as a high school film, and that's The Edge of 17, which is... It's pretty new. It came out last year. Have you guys seen it?
No,
I haven't, but I wanted to see it.
Yeah, so it's just one of those coming-of-age movies. Like, I feel like every year there's like one coming-of-age movie that kind of stands out amongst the rest. It's kind of like Perks of Being a Wallflower or Me and Earl and the Dying Girl or Spectacular Now. Like, there's usually one a year, like an indie film that kind of sticks out. And this one was the one last year that I don't think enough people here in Australia saw it. Like, I feel like a lot of people, it did okay in America, I think, but yeah, it's hard to find, actually talk to people that have actually seen it out here. I think probably people think it's more of like a tween movie, but I'm pretty sure, you know, people in their 20s or 30s or even 40s would enjoy this film. And there's the Woody Harrelson character in the movie makes up for all the teen romance that's going on. So basically Hailee Steinfeld's character, the premise of the film is that she and her best friend have been best buds forever, but then her whole world's thrown into a bit of a spin when her best friend turns out she's dating her brother. So obviously that causes massive upheaval. In kind of the same way that when Emma Stone's character in Easy A kind of decides she's gonna like be a bit of a slut or whatever, or pretend to be a slut, she kind of loses all her friends. This same kind of thing happens in this movie. Hailee Steinfeld gets kind of alienated from everyone. And the only friend she really has is, Woody Harrelson, who plays the teacher, who's very sarcastic, and he's the kind of teacher that you wish you'd had at school. Like, he's just the cool guy who pays her out every chance he gets, even jokes about suicide and stuff. So, yeah, it's very, like, good script. And I haven't really dug Hailee Steinfeld in anything since she was in the True Grit remake. But, she was really good in this. I can't remember. Did she get nominated for this in any of the awards?
No, but she got nominated for True Grit, didn't she?
Maybe a Golden Globe?
Yeah, she got a Golden Globe nom for this. She got Oscar nom for True Grit.
Yeah, she's definitely having a bit of a moment right now because, you know, I'm not a fan of her music, but her music's kind of taken off. And she's now showing that early promise of True Grit, she's living up to it a bit. And you should definitely track this movie down. I'm not sure if it's on home video yet. I actually saw a copy that I shouldn't have seen, if you pick up my drift.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't really released here. Like, I think it had a week release or maybe 2 weeks released here because it didn't.
Yeah, I think it was the end of last year. I know a lot of high school age people that saw it, but I feel like adults would enjoy this as well. And that's why I'm thinking, you know, it's a good one to watch with your partner. And yeah, that's my high school movie.
Cool. What about you, Jared?
All right. I watched the Duff, which stands for the Designated Ugly Fat Friend, which stars Mae Whitman, who played Patricia Whitmore in Independence Day long ago.
Of course she did.
She's all grown up now. And she was also in Perks of Being a Wallflower and Scott Pilgrim and stuff. She's great. She's very funny. It's she plays this girl who has two very hot friends, and at a party, a guy says to her that she's his favorite duff, and so she figures out that she's the less hot friend that they keep around just to make themselves look good. Her friends don't actually think about that, but she kind of spirals out of control, and then it kind of turns into a little bit of a she's all that kind of deal, but it's got a little bit more sarcasm than that. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was really good. All the characters are pretty good. The guy that eventually helps her de-duff is played by Robbie Amell. He's really good, and it's a super easy watch. So, a bit funny, bit of romance, bit sarcastic. Pretty good watch.
Awesome. All right, so week 11 was Schindler's List, the probably most depressing movie I've ever seen in my life. We won't go too much into it, I don't think. I'm assuming both of you have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Great. Then pretty much all I just want to say about it is if you haven't seen it, make sure you see it. It's depressing, but it's also very true. It's probably one of the best versions of the Holocaust that has ever been done on film. Maybe outside of Life is Beautiful is quite good. And the scenes they did in Band of Brothers is really good too.
Mm-hmm.
But Steven Spielberg has a lot of history in this it's pretty flawless. I recommend it.
Yeah.
Schindler's List. Totally, definitely see it.
Totally deserved of all of the accolades that it won. And probably Liam Neeson's best dramatic performance.
Yeah, I actually had a funny story about this. I'll just do it really quick. But so when I watched this with Ariel, I've already seen it many times. But I was watching it with her, I think, for the second time. And it got to about an hour in the film. And we were watching a sequence where, I won't go too much into it, but basically Ralph Fiennes is being a dick. Pretty much what he does the entire film anyway. Is it Ralph Fiennes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes, whatever. He's basically being a dick, and Ariel just looks at me and goes, so the movie's been playing about an hour at this point, and she looks at me and goes, I don't get what's happening. So this is the backstory of Liam Neeson, right? And she's like, I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, yeah, well, this is his past life. Yeah. And I said, wait, hang on, what? And she's like, well, you know, so Liam Neeson is the bad general here, and he's a good guy later on, right? Is that what they're trying to say? And I'm like, wait, that's not Liam Neeson. And she's like, yeah, it is. And I said, no, that's Ralph Fiennes. Liam Neeson's the other guy. They're totally different actors. What are you talking about? And she's like, no, they're the same person. I'm like, no, they're not. So the entire movie up until this point, she had thought they were the same actor. And it was just this realization that she just had. And she just went, oh my God, what am I doing? This entire film just made no sense to me up until this point. But yeah, anyway, it's pretty funny for me. I laughed my head off that for
feel,
a good,
I feel
at least
like,
an hour.
Let's blur out, or sorry, beep out Ariel's name there. I'm sure she would love everyone to
she doesn't
know
care.
She
put it in there. Don't bleep that out. Don't bleep that out. It's my wife. Who cares? She's all right. She wouldn't
my
care.
My wife.
I know my wife.
First time anyone's
she
ever
would
quoted
care.
Borat in 10 years.
All right, well, that's all from us from So Is It Any Good. This is the Movie Nerds Podcast. And if you like what you hear, make sure you head to iTunes and give us a review. It can be a yes, it can be a no. Just let us know what you thought. And for next week, it's week 12 of the Movie Challenge. And that is all about horror movies, in particular horror movies that are labeled the scariest movie ever made. Now, most people are going to go straight up and say, oh, he's talking about The Exorcist, but there have been a lot of films that have been labeled this way. I'm just talking about reviews and blog posts, anything like that is labeled this movie as the scariest movie ever made. Watch it, check it out, be terrified. It's going to be amazing. And that's all from us. I'm Ryan.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Ben.
And that is us from The Movie Nerds. Peace out.